So we should get underway. We're 5 minutes late. So welcome to this session. So I'm operating two modes here. Firstly as chair, and secondly I will have the opportunity to speak. But first let me introduce our first speaker. So Adam Shaw, he's a research fellow at the Centre of Excellence in Population Ageing Research at the University of New South Wales, also affiliated with the School of Risk and Actuarial Studies, the same university. He did his PhD at the University of New South Wales, and he's now working on research as a research fellow. His research area has been around financing the ageing population, particularly to do with reverse mortgages and long-term care. And this is a project that he worked on as part of our reverse mortgage research. And if you stay for the next session, you'll get another paper that's related to the long-term care research we've been working on. And I'm Michael Sherris, and I'll speak, and I'm also at the University of New South Wales. So I'll hand it over to Adam.
Thank you, Mike, for the introduction. Thank you, everybody, for coming to our session. Today we will present a paper on house price risks and return, and we'll co-present with Professor Michael Sherris today. So first of all, before I start, I would like to briefly talk about our research motivation for this paper. As we all know, for individuals, they hold a large proportion of wealth in the form of home equity. And in terms of banks and insurers, they can also have significant exposures to house price risk. If they issue mortgage loans or mortgage insurance, if they have mortgage bank securities, or if they issue equity release products like reverse mortgage, or if they even have property insurance, if they have this business. And typically for these insurers and banks, the house price risk is assessed in time series analysis based on just one market-wide index, that is like a nationwide index or citywide index, like the Sydney Capital House Price Index. But there is another paper in Dorse and Hassin. They find there is a large proportion of risk that comes from the idiosyncratic part. So the idiosyncratic part risk makes the house price more volatile than we expect from just an aggregate index. And what are the implications for banks and insurers? Typically when they hold these products are basically a portfolio of options on individual houses, instead of what we usually say, it's like an option on a portfolio of houses. It's different. It's a portfolio of options on individual houses. So that's why the idiosyncratic risk makes things different. So what do we do in this paper? We compare different house price models that are widely used in the literature. We have four major types of models. The non-regression-based models, they are typically just calculated mean or median over time, so they do not control for the compositional changes. And we'll talk about the models later. And also we have regression-based models, that is hedonic model, repeated sales model, and also a hybrid of the two models that takes into account these two models' advantages. We'll discuss the detailed models later. And after we introduce about the models, we'll discuss how we construct indexes, both for the aggregate index and also disaggregate index. And then we will compare what is the impact of these property characteristics. So now let's look at the house price models. Generally, a house value can be decomposed into two components, the Q and the P here. Q measures the quality of a house, and P here is only about the time changes. So PT here is what we want to look at. That is the house price index we want to focus on. So how do we decompose this into how do we measure this based on this decomposition? And typically we would log on both sides, take the logarithm, natural logarithm on both sides. Then we would denote VQ and P without tilde for the logarithm of house values and the quality measure and the price index. So for the non-regression-based models, what we need to do is simply calculate the mean and the variance of the house values across time. So the Q here is not controlled for at all. And we will later show you a test to see how these compositional changes are significant over time. And for regression-based models, if we take logarithm on both sides, then we will end up with a regression, a linear regression. That is, the log of house value can be expressed as a function, linear function of the house qualities as well as a price index, PT here. And epsilon here is just an error disturbance term. This is basically the hedonic model. And for the repeated sales model, what we need to do is just focus on the sample of houses that are transacted multiple times during the observation period. So in this case, we can difference for the same house. For example, for the same house I, we difference the house transactions across the consecutive sales. Then we will end up with just the difference of a logarithm house values can be expressed as a function of just the difference house price indexes. So this becomes easier because we don't have to use information about the house qualities at all. And then, because we'll discuss later, this model will have sample bias issues because they just focus on houses that are transacted multiple times. For houses that are only transacted once, they are not in the sample. Then we have a hybrid model that takes into account the advantages from both models. Now let's focus on the hedonic model. So based on this equation, what our detailed regression equation is, the logarithm of the house value can be expressed as a function of a linear function of the house qualities. We call this house characteristics that include the number of bedrooms, number of bathrooms, a log land size, as well as the distance to CBD, etc. And beta t here is the time dummy variable, the coefficient for time dummy variable. If the house is transacted at time t, then it's equal to 1. And the coefficient will be what we need to estimate. And alpha is just an intercept, which we will also estimate. And here is also the disturbance term. That's for the simple hedonic model. We also call this a restricted hedonic model. Why we call this restricted hedonic model? That is because here, gamma here, which is a coefficient for house qualities, we assume this is constant. This coefficient is sometimes also called the implicit price of house characteristics that represent how much people value the each different house characteristics. So we also call this implicit prices. If we assume this is constant across time, people value like the number of bathrooms the same across different time, then this will be called a restricted hedonic model. Of course, you may think, oh, this is not realistic. So now we come up with a unrestricted hedonic model. That is, we include an interactional term of the house characteristics and time dummy variable. So the coefficient, the implicit prices for house characteristics would change over time. And this is also an interesting result that is found from this paper. We find people value more and more on the number of bathrooms. Yes, we do. And also we find the distance CBD is very funny. In certain period of time, people value more about the quiet lives. So the distance CBD, the coefficient becomes negative. And later people might find, oh, it's also okay to live around the CBD area. Then it becomes positive as well. So that's why we want to include the time changing implicit prices for different house characteristics. That's the two types of hedonic model. And then the repeated sales model, that is the difference of the log house values can be expressed as a linear function of just the time dummy variables. So then the betas will be used as the, to construct house price indices. But this model is just based on houses that are only transacted multiple times, as we said earlier. Of course, if we have a very long period of observation for the data, then houses will tend to be transacted more times, then the sample bias issue will be smaller. What we have in this data, we have from 1970 to the beginning of 2011, so we have around 41 years data. But still in this long period of data, we still find very important, very large sample bias issues. We'll show that later. And also, the repeat sales models are based on two important assumptions. The first is the house characteristics do not change over time. The house characteristics are stable. This is true probably for the number of bathrooms or for the land size, but not true for the dwelling age. That is how old the house is. Of course, this will change over time. So we will talk about one extension later. And also, we assume the gamma, if we the repeated sales model directly comes from difference equation of the restricted donor model. So where we also assume gamma is time invariant. That is, we put the same value for certain house characteristics over time. This is another assumption. Based on this, we now have another extension that is called age-adjusted repeated sales model. That is, we take into account the change in dwelling age of each specific house. If we denote the dwelling age by A, and then we include a quadratic function of the dwelling age in the repeated sales model, in a simple repeated sales model or standard repeated sales model, why do we include quadratic? It's typically what we do in the prior papers. Some people would use quadratic, some people would use up to the fourth order polynomial function with respect to age. For simplicity, we find the quadratic function is enough to capture the curvature. And then we find the difference between the ages would cause multicollinearity with the difference time domain variables. So what we do is just remove this term, just keep the quadratic term. That's what we use as the age-adjusted repeated sales model. And another extension is the weighted repeated sales model. That is, for this model, for the standard repeated sales model, we find the variance for the error term are not constant. So that's called heteroscedasticity of the residuals. The implications are when the time between two consecutive cells are longer, the variance will become larger. So that's the motivation for including the heteroscedasticity in the repeated cells model. So what we do is to include another regression, that is look at the variance of the residuals, regress this as a linear function of the time between two consecutive cells. And then we typically would find the theta 1 to be positive. That's from a prior paper. So we use the same method here. That are the two building blocks for the hybrid model. That is the hedonic model and repeated sales model. With these two building blocks, then we look at the hybrid model. For the hybrid model, the first component is the hedonic part of the hybrid model. That is, the house is still the same as the unrestricted hedonic model here. It's the same equation, except that we have one more error term that captures the individual house specific error. And we also assume this is uncorrelated with a white noise sign here. So the typical assumptions are the expected value for each term is equal to zero, and the variance, they have specific variance, and also for the white noise, they are not correlated across different houses or across time. And also the two components are uncorrelated. It's also our assumption. And then if we difference this equation, then we would end up with the repeated cells part of this hybrid model. Repeated cells part. Because we allow for time variant implicit prices, so we can't, we must have the difference time dumb variables to be reflected in the hedonic, in the repeated cells part. It's another different from the standard repeated cells model. And then the hybrid model is composed of three components. The first is we use regression based on equation one on houses with just single cells. That's the first part. The second part is still the hedonic part, but we use equation one again, but on houses with multiple cells, except the last cells, or the previous cells, except the last cells. And we will show that with data later. And the last part is use equation two, this repeated cells part, on repeated cells data. That is on repeated cells, and that is the difference of consecutive cells data. Then if you put these three equations together, we would have a covariance matrix for these three different equations on different data. So a demonstration of the hybrid model based on our data. We got data from the Residex company. It's just on Sydney houses. And for single cells, we found more than 300,000 observations. And also we found there were 440,000 houses that are transacted multiple times in the data set. For single cells, for example, if one house is transacted in 1998, we simply just use equation one. Just use it for equation one, for the first part of hybrid model. And for these multiple celled houses, then we would first use equation one. If one house is transacted multiple times in 1996, 2002, 2008, and 2011, but for the second part, we won't use this last cell. We just use the first three cells in the model for the second component of the hybrid model. And then the last equation is to use equation two based on the consecutive cells, that is the repeated cells data. And then we stack these three equations together to get the hybrid model. So here is another snapshot to look at the data we have. We have in total nearly 1.6 million observations. And if you use the hybrid model, because we have more equations, the last part, so we would have more observations in the hybrid model to fully utilize the information implied from the repeated cells data as well as the single cells data. And that's why this total number of observations will be higher for the hybrid model compared to the hedonic model. Of course, for the repeated cells model, the number of data will be just this, the number of observations. Is based on the pairs of consecutive cells. So that is the different house plus models we introduced. Now, based on the models, how do we construct house plus index? For the aggregate index, it's a very typical method. We scale everything to 100. So we scale the house plus index to 100 at the base year, if we call this zero. And then we use the beta t, that is estimated from the equations here, the beta t. We use the estimate for beta t plus this delta is the capital delta, the components for the delta here, for the delta t. That captures the time varying implicit prices for house characteristics. So we use these two estimates to construct a house price index. But here, x0u is the average house quality at the base year. So we need to control the house quality because what we need to estimate in the house price index is just the price changes due to time. That's why we call index. We need to control to have a constant quality. There are three different methods, but here we just focus on the quality at the base year. Some people may do the quality at in the middle of the year, or some people do at the most recent year. It's just three different methods, as long as we keep consistent. In this method, in this paper, we use the base year quality. And for different houses, for specific house, or for a portfolio of houses that have common factors in the house characteristics. For example, just for two-bedroom houses with one bathroom, if we just focus on this type of houses, we can use this disaggregate index. How do we construct these indexes? We use the same method, except that the qualities will be different. Here, the quality, we just use the average qualities for the particular houses. If we call this row, then we construct house price index for houses with house row with certain types of characteristics. And this last equation is to link the disaggregated house price index to the average house price index. We can link based on the above two equations. So now let's look at what data tells us. First, we want to test whether there is significant compositional changes, that is, the average house qualities will change over time or not. If they do not change very much, then we can just simply use the non-regression based model. We just calculate the mean or median across time. That's okay. Let's see whether the qualities change or not. First, we look at all the houses. Now the houses, we calculate the average qualities for the different types of house characteristics. And then we look at the average qualities for houses that are transacted in 1971. And different years. We select different years every 10 years. And then we perform a Waxman Wachni test. If we look at the p-values here, if it's very small, that means it's significant. It's significantly different for different periods of time. The house quality will change significantly if p is very small. And we find this for many of the house characteristics. And for other years, for later years, we still find very small p-values. So this indicates we have very significant compositional changes. That is, what's the average qualities in the market? They change over time. So this provides motivation for why the non-regression models cannot be used. The Australian Bureau of Statistics, priorly they use the non-regression models, just calculate the median across time. And then this is why this is not okay. And then we look at whether there is significant sample bias in the data for repeat sales model. So what we need to compare is just for houses with single transactions and houses with multiple transactions. Let's look at whether the qualities are very different. Then we find we perform the same test here, the Waxman-Wachni test. Then we find the p-values are very small. That indicates the qualities are very different in the two data sets. So this provides why the repeated sales model is not okay in estimating the house price index. Yes?
Number of bedrooms, should they state your name?
Hi, I'm Gary. Number of bedrooms is 3.4 and 3.38. That doesn't seem very different, and still your p-value is extremely small.
Small for 3.4.
So the mean number of bedrooms for single transactions and multiple transactions.
Yeah. But why? You mean similar?
It's very, very similar.
It's very similar, but why is it different?
So are you allowing for the fact that you have such a large data set and hence small differences would cause p-values to be very significant?
Well, the mean might look very similar. It's also the case for number of bathrooms, although they look very similar because typically they just have two to five very integer numbers. So although very small changes in the mean can mean very different in the composition of the houses. So just looking at the mean doesn't say anything.
Okay.
So that is the sample bias for the repeat sales data. And then we look at, if you just focus on repeat sales data, if you look at what is the sales frequency for the different houses, we find most houses are sold a transaction twice during the absorption period, and then it's getting lower for more frequent houses. And also we look at the average number of years between consecutive sales. We find it's generally the trend is lower. The trend is lower because typically for houses that are transacted many times, they tend to be more frequently transacted later. That's what we find as well. And also we find for multiple transacted houses, the average price tend to be lower than the single transacted houses. It's also a theory going on in literature saying it's more frequently transacted, then the quality might get lower. That's a theory going on in the literature, but we need to test. We didn't formally test this. And then I'll hand over to Mike to talk about the results and the conclusions.
Thanks, Adam. So if you do have questions, you can either wait till the end and then use the microphone or put up your hand and ask. So just to set the results in context, what we were trying to do here is have a look at how the returns and variability varied across different types of houses. So if you had a portfolio, if you like, of three-bedroom houses, how different is the returns and risks of that compared with two bedrooms, one bedroom, or the distance from CBD and so on. And the problem is that think of a share market where the individual shares very rarely trade. So each house is like a share, and some shares have similar characteristics. So they're all in this group of shares are in mining, but they don't very frequently trade. So what we want is an index somehow of the share market in that kind of context, and also of the mining index or sub-indices. And so all the models that Adam's been looking at are models that have been suggested to measure the returns on housing in a market where there aren't that frequent trades going on, where lots of other things are going on in houses. Quality could be changing. Preferences for some characteristics are changing. People are preferring more of a particular share and willing to pay more because of that. So we're trying to extract that from the traded data. And that's what these house price indices try to do. And just to compare the different models that we looked at, and we've used all of the standard kinds of models. We show here some summary statistics of the returns from these different models in terms of their distribution, right? So their means often are very similar, and we'll show that shortly, I think. But their medians vary quite a lot depending on the method used. Skewness varies quite a lot. Kurtosis is relatively high, so we actually have some normal distribution type assumptions at the moment, but kurtosis suggests that may not be totally appropriate. And the spread of these is very similar in terms of the spread, but obviously the distributional characteristics do vary a bit across these different models. And this shows the means and the standard deviations at the aggregate index level. So we apply all the models and we look at adjusting for all the characteristics, the bedrooms, controlling for all that, what's the underlying growth rate of the market based on our data, Sydney property prices transacting, what's the mean and the standard deviation of returns on property, residential property over this time period, 72 to 2011 in Sydney. You can see that all the methods give very similar means, right? Mean, median. They do vary, and the variation looks small. Some of them are a little bit high, age-adjusted repeat sales, for example. Standard deviations vary quite a bit, so the different methods that you use do impact the estimate of the variability or the risk in these markets, so that's an important feature to bring out. And the range that you get from these different models, they're capturing different factors in different ways, also varies a fair bit. But many of the standard used methods, particularly hedonics, very popular, adjusting for characteristics using the hedonic, whether it's restricted or unrestricted. The median is often used but has some issues, but you can see these methods give very similar means but quite different measures of variability. And if we're interested in risk, that's an important thing to take into account. The hybrid's down the bottom, so the hybrid hopefully has the best characteristics in some sense for estimating aggregate market level returns, because it takes into account all of the data, allows for the repeat sales, it has the property characteristics in the hedonic part of it. So this is hopefully a more powerful way of estimating the aggregate market returns and volatility. There's some things that we should mention also about the vintage effect and the ageing of houses. Obviously this has an effect. So if you look at the impact of depreciation, you have to capture that, right? As houses get older, there's a depreciation going on. So this shows the impact of depreciation through what's called the vintage effect. So as houses get older, they depreciate, but sometimes people prefer an older house and pay more for an older house, right? So you've got to disaggregate those two effects. And this shows the depreciation effect under the different methods, and you can see it varies quite a bit across the different methods if you are trying to estimate the impact of depreciation. And this shows the vintage effect, in other words, how much people are prepared to pay for houses from different eras. And you can see there's a preference for older houses. People in the Sydney market buying these houses pay a bit more above the odds for a well-built older house than a jerry-built small apartment or whatever it is more recently. But you can see those two effects. You can extract that from the models as well. So what we were really interested in was trying to compare these different methods, because we were interested in measuring the returns and volatility according to different characteristics. We show here the location characteristic, in other words, how far they are from the CBD. So we have an inner, which is close to the CBD, a middle, an outer, and an outskirt house. So this is based on distance from CBD. And we also have the bathroom. So when you look at the significant factors that people are prepared to pay for, bathroom comes up very strongly. So we've included the number of bathrooms, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 or bigger. Obviously, more bathrooms, you'd probably expect people to pay more for those kinds of characteristics. But as I said, we're interested in the means and the variability. Now, the variability is going to affect the number of houses in each of these groups, right? So the bigger the group, then you're aggregating down the variability. So when you go to looking at individual houses, you have to model the volatility with these factors, which is something Adam had a look at. This is just looking at these groups, subgroups, and how they vary. And obviously, smaller groups have more volatility. So if you're in the outskirts and there aren't as many houses, then you'd expect them to be more volatile. If you have a look at the hybrid model, you can see that the hybrid model basically just smooths out the impact of all these different factors, right? So the volatility doesn't vary very much across these different characteristics. So when you put all the data together in the hybrid model, you'll see the means don't vary a lot, but across all the different methods, they don't vary a lot. But the standard deviations, it's good at aggregate level, but not going down to individual smaller group type houses, looking at 3 bedrooms versus 2 bedrooms and so on. So that's the hybrid model, so we can kind of cross that out if we're looking at these other characteristics. The other thing you note is that there's some consistency in terms of means and standard deviations when you look at these different methods. They all look kind of similar if you look at the repeat sales and the two hedonic methods here. They kind of capture higher volatility in the classes where you have, if you like, fewer houses, and the means aren't that different. So just eyeballing that, it's hard to know what you would use as a methodology if you wanted to go down to some disaggregated level. You'd cross out most likely the hybrid. You'd use hybrid at an aggregate level as being more indicative, accurate, but be cautious with using it for smaller groups, because it uses all the data and it estimates aggregate. This is just a plot of the returns with the different factors built in and the impact of that on, so there's an overall index, and then houses based on CBD, coastline, near the airport, near harbour. So this is looking at the impact of location and the volatility, right? So you can see, for example, the red line, the CBD line. If I can find the thing there. This guy is quite volatile, reflecting small numbers of houses in that group. You can see the coastline. You can see they're all starting at 100, so coastline has quite a benefit and CBD houses quite benefit. You can see also the airport. Airport doesn't do too badly, right? It has some pluses and some minuses. Impact of park doesn't seem to be great. So this is just indicating the impact of location in a graphical form.
A quick question. Does this stuff show the different economic cycles? That you know the different boom. I'm quite fascinated by this graph. So the impact of airport is obviously very different from some of the earlier periods. And I'm quite fascinated by the fact that you've done this over such a long period. And I guess I'm trying to understand whether this allows you to see the individual characteristics of the various property booms. And I think it does, but...
Well, you could probably tease that out. We haven't specifically looked at the time variation. I mean, what we've been focusing on is relative dependability of different methodologies in capturing volatility and return. We haven't gone and looked at factors driving different time periods in returns. But that would be something.
So the various booms as to whether it's the inner ring or the middle ring or the outer ring, I'm wondering if this graph tells us something about that.
It may do a little bit, but this is, we could look at that specifically. We haven't gone down and looked at time variation and things like booms and busts or whatever and different characteristics driving that. Yeah. But that would be an interesting thing to look at. But sure, this graphically, this shows that there are things going on and certain time periods. So, there was a time when the market was standing still, right? And now we've seen, going up and up. Maybe it will start standing still again, or, some people hope it will go down a bit because it's maybe, I don't know, people reckon it's 25% overvalued, but who knows?
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a good question, but I don't have the answer. But we could have a look at that. It's an interesting point. So what we did was we said, well, if you just eyeball those figures, you can't really tell what's going on. So we said, why don't we use something like an information ratio? Why don't we look at taking the return against an overall benchmark return, the aggregate return per unit of standard deviation, and do this across the different methods and have a look to see if we see something that we expect in terms of consistency, because that would suggest to us that that method would be a better method to use. Now, we've already kind of dismissed the hybrid method. It's a little, at the aggregate level, obviously it's telling us some things that we need to know about returns, these higher numbers of bathrooms, but it's kind of down and up. But if you look at the other methods, they're quite all over the place, but you can see, as you might expect, these information ratios, the further out you go, the less well they've been doing, and it's kind of consistent. Whereas these two methods, the standard repeat sales seems to pick up what you expect, whereas these two are all over the place, they're not as consistent. And the same story when you look at bathrooms, you can see the impact much more consistently than you do for these two methods. So the hybrid we dismiss because it, particularly on the volatility level, it's good for the aggregate level, but not at this finer degree of refinement. And then in terms of consistency, we were thinking, if you have a look at it, the standard repeat sales method would be something that would be closer to what you would expect than these other two methods given by the hedonic method variations of it. So that was kind of our motivation in trying to pick out the different methods and the hybrid good at the aggregate level and then the repeat sales good when we start looking at different subgroups or different submarkets, different characteristics of properties and their returns. That was the kind of conclusion. So before I open it up for questions, we'll have some time. Our aim was basically to have a look at these different methods of modelling house price returns. We were trying to account for the characteristics of houses, look at the range of different methods and try and compare them, particularly looking at some specific characteristics that are regarded as impacting property prices most, including distance from CBD and number of bathrooms. And we looked at other characteristics as well. We've used data to actually look at these trends and volatility and see how well these models measure that. But we found one way to look at it is the information ratio and see which gives a more consistent picture, which gave us our repeat sales. What, they're ringing the bell already? So I should finish. And our motivation has really been looking at reverse mortgages and pricing equity release products, and you need a house price model and you need to go down to finer detail. So I don't want to go any more. I'll just open it up for comments and questions. I think we have about 5 minutes. Well, we have 10 minutes, I think, don't we?
Five minutes.
5 minutes. We got at least 5 minutes because we're on next, and I don't know who's chairing it, but I can push them aside.
Okay. James Sickie from Deloitte. Thanks, guys. A few questions. I think Robin asked a good question. I was wondering as well as how do you link it to the economic cycle or even tax or other changes such as negative gearing being introduced, restrictions or otherwise on foreign investment and so forth can obviously impact house prices, as does irrational behaviour, so proximity to schools potentially as well, and other influences that change over time. I wondered how you incorporate over time changing factors. So obviously what's a factor in 1971, bathrooms, number of bedrooms, may not be as important in 2011, which might be proximity to good schools as measured by NatSam and so forth, and how those can be factored into a 40-year analysis period.
We actually show some in the appendix, or?
Yeah, show.
We have some in the appendix.
So the model allows you to estimate.
Yes.
Impacts
and
different factors.
So a different method is for projection, and then we find how the time changes over time, what's the implicit drivers behind those. And for different types of houses, we also show the projections with confidence intervals. Very good question. Yes, we did that. But it's a different, separate paper.
Yeah. Well, we haven't looked at a lot of those different aspects of what's driving the market up and down. But the model has in there the time-varying impact of those different factors, so we can't show it here, but, you know, it's been estimated in the model and not presented here.
Right.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah. And the other thing, and you can see it here, that there's a lot of volatility in house prices. I mean, you don't notice it, right, because you only see houses trading every so often and what have you. But when you take the whole market together and you estimate volatility, it's quite high. So you're sitting on a... And the return's not too bad, quite a good return, right? Robin will tell you this. So you've got quite a volatile asset you don't realise is volatile. So when you look at your portfolio and you've got your equities, you should think about your house also having some volatility and providing other benefits. But yeah, and so a lot of uncertainty when you start projecting prices.
Especially individual house price volatility.
Yeah. 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 That's right, exactly, yeah. Well, that's kind of our motivation. We haven't gone down to the... We did start by estimating volatility as a function of house price characteristics, which is probably what we need to go back to. We basically looked at kind of subgroups and gone down more refined, which captures some of that, but not everything.
Peter Szabo. Do you have the data to look at actually land value and to the point where you might be able to break up the value of the property between land and dwellings? And also, my I was wondering if you could expand a bit more. In the actual written paper, you were saying that talking about the application of this to equity release products, rather than just limiting it to the application to reverse mortgages.
On the first thing, we have land size, right? Yeah, we don't have land value, so we've relied on what we've been able to access from Residex, but you know there are other databases of that kind of information. So we haven't incorporated that. We do have a kind of maybe a proxy for it, but no, we haven't. And there's another paper where we did apply it to at least for reverse mortgages, in terms of looking at depending on the house price characteristics, what the premium. Risk premium is, if you like, according to the default risk, and it varies substantially across these different types of houses. You're probably aware of that.
Does the age of dwelling factor somewhat try to take into account the relativity of dwelling versus the age of value? So obviously the older the age of dwelling, the bigger the appreciated value, the more relative value weightings to the land value.
Yeah, it could. I mean, we haven't specifically looked at that, but it would be. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Depreciates. Yes. Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we should have a look at that. All right, well, it looks like we're out of time, so thank you for your time, and let's thank the speakers.